Hidden Growth Champions, the podcast. Business news, views, and insights from across the globe.
Welcome, everyone, to our podcast series, Hidden Growth Champions. Today in our virtual studio, I've got Leon de Fleurien. Leon, it's great having you in our studio. I mean, we've known each other for a good number of years now. We've worked together. I've seen you at work developing new products, shaping organizations, giving direction. And it's just great to have you for a conversation in our virtual studio about your work, about the kind of innovations and new approaches that you're seeing in the marketplace, and talking about how we can bring more of those at scale. So it's a great time to have the conversation. Great to have you here. And please tell us a little bit more about yourself.
Thank you very much, Saul. Thank you for inviting me. I spent the first 15 years plus a little bit of interest building up my own ISP and development business. So I've been in the technology space almost straight out of university and built my own business. I've seen, you know, firsthand with real scars what works and what doesn't work. After that, I got the opportunity to move into corporate in the telecommunication space, working in M&O. Was really, really interesting because I saw what worked within my own business. And then I saw what worked and didn't work within the corporate environment. And I found that that was quite an interesting exposure, having kind of walked this path yourself and been in direct control of your own destiny. And then kind of then moving into a corporate environment and having to fit inside a corporate structure and corporate rules and corporate goals. And then to still try and develop and grow product and scale business within that framework. So it's very interesting to be able to have the exposure to both of the organic and kind of the more structured environments and trying to see which are the things that one can take out of each environment that can kind of help you build new product, innovate and scale.
Leon, big question we've spoken about on numerous occasions was the kind of difference between what happens in the lab and what happens in the commercial environment, in the marketplace. And we see so many organizations, and you've spoken yourself about your own experience of taking an idea. And in so many organizations, in the lab environment, kind of almost takes a life of its own, right? The pseudometrics that gets measured, the kind of vibe that gets created. But that's very different. And so few of those ideas actually make it up in the market into full commercial success. What do you think we're getting wrong in that equation? What are we missing?
Sure. There's so many aspects to this, I think. But I think developing stuff in the lab definitely has to have a customer focus. Quite often what happens in the lab environment is a whole bunch of product people get together and come up with a great and wonderful idea. And it could be a clearly innovative idea. It could be something that nobody has ever done before. It could be a really, really cool piece of technology. It could be tech that no one has ever seen before. But often in the pure lab development world, the link back to the customer is often not as clear or not as transparent or not really based on real world interaction with customers. And I think just from a pure product dev perspective, building a really cool brand new mousetrap without a customer will you know, is doomed to failure. And the other is also true. I mean, building product in a corporate environment because you're going after a certain customer segment, but if you're not really innovating, you're not really adding any value or adding any USP to that market segment, is also doomed to failure. So you kind of need to have a good mixture of both, where you've got really a clear solution to a problem that a customer has. And I mean, if one can really drill down to that statement, that customer problem statement in the innovation in the lab space, and you can really clearly address the customer's problem and you can build an innovative solution around that that can scale and still can make you some money, then you've got a winner, you know. And trying to distill in the lab space all the different product innovations or initiatives that have been worked on almost through that lens can help you kind of eliminate efforts that are going to go to naught. So I think one is, if you're not solving a problem for a customer at the end of the day, then you know, you're putting effort off to something that's not really going to give you a return. And the return is not always directly financial on that product. Particularly coming from the telecommunications space, there are a lot of products that are brought and put into the market to serve customer problems that don't necessarily make money by themselves, but they may be there for other strategic reasons, you know, addressing churn, making the customer's brand more sticky. You know, there's a number of other reasons that one can have a product in the market barring just pure profit off that revenue line. So if one almost in the lab environment overlays a customer wish list or customer problem statement over every single one of the products, has a very clear view of which customer is being served, how that problem is being solved, how big that market size is, what are the other value for the business that can be attributed from the launching of that product, and is there ever going to be a negative perception because of the launch of that product? You know, so there's a lot of factors that one needs to almost look at inside your product development space to make sure that your products are actually going to deliver value for the business long term. The other aspect, I think, is I mentioned long term. People look at the product development lifecycle, but when one is sitting in a corporate commercial environment, one needs to understand and needs to know what is going to give you value in the next month, the next quarter, the next half year, and then the full year. You're operating against a revenue budget that you need to execute against, and you need products and services that are going to help you deliver that revenue line. So you look into your product team and you say, well, what's going to give me a boost? What's going to help me? What work needs to be done to existing products to improve them? So you kind of have to almost compromise against these different pulls and pushes from the business and from the product space and from the customer to kind of distill out those products that are eventually going to deliver against your commercial targets, but also your customer retention targets and your customer acquisition targets. So, you know, all of those need to kind of be looked at together in order to be able to pull through product from the lab space into the commercial environment. And I mean, just when one talks about all these different things that are kind of vying for attention or the compromise that needs to be made, you can clearly see that when something is sitting in the lab space, a lot of items that are sitting in that kind of development environment will never, ever make it through to commercial realization, just because maybe they're too long term. Maybe they're not addressing a large enough market segment. So you can kind of see how a lot of things that, even though it's a really cool idea and it's interesting and it's good technology, it will never, ever make it into full-time production and generate revenue.
Leon, you've picked up on such an important element of leadership here that I just wanted to give a bit of attention to. And that is that, you know, we often find, even in the lab environment, let alone in a commercial environment, in the bigger organization where their, you know, corporate politics plays a role and the kind of today's metrics dominate, even in the lab environment, one of the things that we've noticed is that solving for a customer problem often faces us with the customer's dilemma. It's not always as simple as simply pointing to a problem in isolation of everything else. If we could just solve for this, everything else falls in line. You know, if I think of customers, for example, banking on their mobile or doing financial transactions on their mobile, and we see that more and more, it's not perhaps as simple as, you know, we value the convenience that brings. But we also value the trust and the connection that, you know, having a conversation with a trusted professional brings in. And those are often our dilemmas. The both of them are true. It's not that the one cancels the other and somehow there's some magical technology that we can just wish away one part of the equation. We learn to live in uncertainty. We learn to live with more than one truth, that by bringing those various truths together, what creates the dilemma, we very often find really valuable problems to solve, that perhaps this was not a merely providing convenience for a customer for already a known value proposition, but we've hit something deeper. And therefore, there is more value at stake here, because now we're getting to know the customer much more intimately. Now we're getting to know the customer where they face their dilemmas. It is much more than our current value proposition added to or augmented. We are really steeped in the customer's world. So perhaps talk to us a little bit about what happens in that magical space where we really get to steep ourselves in customers and get to learn about their dilemmas.
Look, it's a very, very interesting dynamic. And it's very interesting that you raise it, because in the corporate environment I've been exposed to, so it's very, very rare that the leadership gets direct exposure to the customer. Now, what I mean by this, you know, building my own business up, I sat across the table from most of my bigger customers on the development projects that we worked on them with, crafting the solutions, tailoring them to what the customer needed, understanding their business, understanding the problem, trying to get the technology to a point where it could actually help them address that problem. So that was a very, very interesting process, you know, working directly with customers. When you're in a big corporate environment, it's quite rare that a sort of C-level executive will actually sit down with a customer and actually go through issues with that customer, and particularly in the telecommunication space, because in the telecommunication space, the products are really generic. You've got voice, you've got data, you've got messaging services, you've got value-added services. It's fairly mature space. So it's very rare that you're going to have a C-level executive sit down with an end customer and truly understand their experience and the problems that they're having within the organization. And what was quite interesting to me, and what we try to do, is we try to, particularly around launching new products, the launch of a new product is kind of, from my perspective, was about 60-70% about the new product. But the balance of it was about sitting down with those customers and kind of explaining the new product to them. And in explaining a new product or service to a customer, you open up this forum for the customer to not only talk to you about the new and interesting product, but also to raise issues with the existing products. And that kind of opened the door for an ongoing discussion and engagement going forward. So you almost pick up kind of a friendly customer that one can continue engaging with. So they'll raise a billing issue with you or a service issue with you relating to some of your existing products. You can go down and work through that with the customer. In doing so, picking up and identifying, you know, some problems within the current workflows that, you know, we have within the business. So you can kind of streamline that, work on streamlining that with the customer. But what you've done in that engagement is you've now created a trust between you and the customer, and the customer now has your phone number and has access to you on a daily basis, which can be a little bit disruptive, but the value that you get from engaging with the customer directly, it is invaluable. You suddenly have got somebody who's spending their money on your service. That business, that service that he's getting from you, is integral to the delivery of his business and his products and services. So you form this kind of chain of trust that you can now start leveraging to get true and real feedback about your products in the market and about what problems the customer currently solves with your products and services. But not only that, but looking forward, you start understanding their business, you start understanding where they're taking their business. And in looking through that lens, one can almost start mapping out what the future of your products and services for that customer are going to look like. But it's about creating that platform to start engaging with customers. So you almost use the new product or new products and services, like a launch event or a focus group, to kind of start that engagement with friendly customers and also an engagement with unfriendly customers. Interestingly enough, you know, you'll find that if somebody's got a problem with one of your products and services, they'll come to your launch so they can engage with you, so they can engage with a face. And you know, that kind of interaction is important, because being able to solve problems for customers, and particularly this is more in the B2B space, I would say, you know, you build those relationships and you can cultivate friendly and trusted customers out of that engagement, and you leverage that and use that in building your products and services going forward.
Leon, I mean, as I listen to you, clearly, it's not only the incumbent players within telecommunications, even in related industries, digital services, infrastructure providers even, that recognize the value and the importance of solving problems with customers and developing that trust and that ongoing conversation that you spoke about. You suddenly find, for example, that, you know, the rise of corporate venturing units, the rise of startups that get funded externally through VCs and other mechanisms, those are no less than you, no less than incumbents in the industries, are trying to solve interesting customer problems. So suddenly we're not the only ones who are trying to develop that chain of trust. We're not the only ones who are trying to focus on a really interesting problem and solving a real dilemma with and for the customer. There's more competition out there, and possibly even the potential for cooperation between those different players. So, and this is something that you know, if I have to kind of reflect back, I mean, looking at the telecommunication industry and, you know, over the last 15, 20 years, I can't recall a time when it was that high point, you know, the development of these new structures, of these new vehicles, of these new players that are coming in and also trying to solve this problem. And I just wanted to get a sense from you of what is the type of activities that you see? I mean, is the corporate venturing that takes place, is the new players that are coming in, are they making a difference to the way in which teams within corporates are trying to solve these problems?
I can't comment for everybody, just probably my own experience, but maybe just a step back. If one looked at the telecommunications industry, particularly the mobile network operator space, about 5, 10 years ago, new products were always hampered by potential cannibalization. So, you know, every new product was looked at through this lens of, well, how would it impact? It's the same customer base. How will this new product impact the revenues that the business gets from the existing products? So let's picture the OTT services as an example. WhatsApp as an example, entering into the market, taking away potential revenues from voice. Now, I always had a slightly different view to this. You know, if one takes the pure accounting commercial view, obviously we don't want to introduce products that are going to cannibalize our existing revenues. We want to try and keep our cash cow going as long as possible, or our cash generative products going as long as possible. But I always had this view that, you know, disrupt yourself before somebody else disrupts you, because you don't want to be in the position where somebody else is disrupting you and then you lose all the revenue and you lose the customer relationship. So, you know, even if you're introducing products into the market that may be disruptive to existing revenue flows, you're still solving a customer's problem. But you're solving a customer's problem. Yes, it may reduce your revenue, but you're improving your relationship with that customer. And I wouldn't say lock in, that's not really the correct term, but you're improving the level of trust between you and the customer by continuously innovating, even though that innovation in itself is potentially has a potential impact on your margins. So, you know, if businesses are keeping that in mind, I think venturing into, you know, the venturing as you spoke about it becomes very, very interesting space, because if you can keep that connection to the customer and deliver a better service to that customer, whether you do it yourself or whether you partner with somebody to do it, at the end of the day, you're still seen as almost the arbiter of truth with the customer. You are the person that is making sure that the customer is getting value, making sure that the customer is getting served. If you can keep that customer relationship in the long term, you know, you will be rewarded by the customer's loyalty to you, and you'll be rewarded by the customer viewing you as a trusted advisor. And I think that is the value at the end of the day that it is going to be generated that will drive long-term performance. Now, I keep talking about long-term and short-term. Telecommunications businesses are inherently short-term. They have a short-term lens of which they look at their business, and they have to. But for the long-term strategic growth of the business, you need a long-term view. And, you know, delivering products and services to your customers, partnerships, solving customer problems, whether by yourself or in partnership with somebody else, I think becomes incredibly important, because you need to be seen as that trusted provider of counsel and of products and services.
When you think about the units within organizations, whether corporate venturing, whether innovation teams, sometimes strategy teams that have grown and morphed into something more than that's just a strategic planning function within an organization, very often those are the units who get to interface with and kind of work at the edge. They get to speak to organizations that for most of the of their incumbent organization might be competitors, may not be trusted partners as yet. They create those value networks that the broader organization often lacks. So when I think of their role in that context, are you finding that those individuals, those teams, are you finding that the conversation between them and their corporate parent is changing? Are you finding that the long-term orientation is being, if not fully endorsed, at least entertained to a greater degree? Are they getting a voice around the table?
Is that the right possible structure? I'm not convinced, but they're definitely getting a voice around the table. Where I think there are potentially some holes is the feedback loop. So they engage, they speak, you know, they build up a network of partners. They engage with really high level businesses in line with the current business, and they build up great relationships. You know, how does that loop back into the product team, the customer team, the consultants dealing with specific customers? I haven't seen that loop back working that well. So I think from a strategic level, I think it's working great, and a lot of new partnerships are being signed. How that's actually delivering value to the end customer, it is working from time to time and with certain products that are very, very well defined and packaged. But I think I'm seeing that there's a gap. There's definitely a gap, you know, in the businesses I've been exposed to. And that's not a reflection on the businesses. I mean, they really are trying to get this right. But it's an inherently difficult thing to solve, because your standard telecommunications M&O business is built around driving efficiency of delivery of the product and services to that end customer. the efficiency means in and out. You know, you've got to get the product to the customer, get it up and running, deliver the 10,000 SIM cards, deliver the 5,000 phones. You know, that's the kind of individual and the structure that's been built to serve those customers. So having that ongoing discussion and engagement with the customer and with a consultant that's at the right level, I think isn't quite being delivered yet. I've definitely seen improvements. Certain MNOs are building up consulting capability within their organization to kind of take those networks that have been built out in the CVC space and kind of trying to loop back into the customer engagements. So it's probably happening at the bigger customer engagements, but not quite pervasive throughout the business. So I think we're getting there. And I think there's definitely the building out of the network, I think is good. I think it's that delivery to the end customer that isn't quite where it should be. And I know I'm kind of casting judgment across, I'm generalizing massively here. But in the couple of businesses I've been exposed to, it really isn't pulling through yet. And it's almost structural to kind of pin it down to a reason. And one needs to just look at the almost the juxtaposition of what the MNO is built to do. The MNO is built to execute highly efficiently, deliver vast numbers of SIM cards and phones and network connections to the business. It's not built to sit down and engage and understand a customer's environment, you know, consult with them, build up that relationship, understand the customer's business, potentially around the B2B verticals, but it's not quite at that stage where it can kind of open up completely and deliver those strategic relationships that have been built up and generate value from those strategic relationships. I think it's still, you know, it's still a progression. I think it'll get there, but one almost needs to kind of address some of the structural issues so that it is able to generate more value for the business. And I'm sure you're seeing it in your engagements with customers.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great point, Leon. I mean, the internal alignment is one thing, getting those challenges in the organization to influence and to open up the strategic conversation is one thing, but getting them to now branch out and have the conversation more broadly and getting them to, you know, to challenge how we go about, for example, engaging B2B customers. It's a different conversation. It's a different engagement model. The metrics are different. Your proof points of early success are different. And I've seen in many MNOs, as well as even more broadly in the digital economy, how very often those attempts fail. They start off with great fanfare and great PowerPoint presentations of how we're going to dominate industry verticals. And I guess to your point, much needs to be done on the leadership, on the cultural, and the model through which we engage those customers for insight, for co-creation, for development of solutions that matter to them. That's a real learning curve that takes time to adjust to. And I think the MNOs, many of them are going through that learning curve at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. I mean, if you had an entrepreneur that was trying to build that business, has a set of tools that are provided to him by the strategic relationships of the business. And speaking with a customer, he is probably, his mind is already geared around solving problems, utilizing his toolbox. If you're in a corporate B2B environment, that's not always the case. I've got a playbook that I've got to deliver to the customer. So just the mindset is different, I think. And I'm not casting aspersions on the way it's currently operating. It's just from a structural perspective. I think possibly, you know, it would be interesting to see if somebody went full out and said, brought in an entrepreneur who'd probably built their own business, maybe sold it off and said, right, I want you to build a new business within my business. This is your toolbox. Off you go. Go and build up a business from scratch versus a mature B2B team that is dealing in a specific industry vertical. Give them this toolbox. And they probably more used to dealing with a really defined playbook with very clear parameters, and they've got a very different sales cycle as opposed to somebody who's trying to co-create something with a partner to build long-term value. So I think maybe there's just a bit of a mismatch in terms of, you know, the types of people or the structure that's trying to deliver these partnerships to your customer, you know, to a company's customers.
Yeah, I mean, Leon, you were kind of making me reflect on, you know, if I had to kind of compare MNOs and their enterprise business unit plans kind of version 1.0 that we've seen over, say, the last 5, 6, 7 years, they're remarkably similar. And there's a lot of assumptions being made about how we're going to go about and dominate this market. Many of them have not reached those bold aspirations. And that's where the kind of collaborations, the kind of honest conversations that we have with clients and bringing a different model where one can innovate at much greater speed, that becomes valuable. And I'm starting to see evidence of that 2.0 model, where it is much more network-based, where it allows for more open innovation, where it allows for others to participate in and bring a value proposition that's different to yourself, not as a, just a mere vendor or content provider, but as an entity or a party that can really drive a different value proposition to market, and it becomes a true partner to the MNO. We're starting to see more of those models coming to the fore. It'll be really interesting to see whether those can really move the dial for MNOs as they try to and strive for a much bigger share of the enterprise business market.
Yes, and I mean, also inside the MNO environment, I mean, failure is not rewarded. So if you've got people that are trying different approaches, just the structure of the MNO, and I'm generalizing, of course, but you know, if somebody fails with a specific approach, that's usually not a good thing, and it's usually not rewarded. It's usually not chalked up to school fees, and then you know, usually there's a you know, usually changes are made after certain levels of failure. So you know, one almost, you know, and maybe there's a question that needs to be asked. You know, is some of this venture building and some of this capability, is it fair to build it inside the MNO? Is it possible that it probably needs to be built in parallel? I don't know. These are questions. You know, one, is it fair to try and build up this new type of engagement inside this highly structured, highly kind of numbers driven environment, this performance environment? So, you know, I don't know, maybe that's kind of a something that needs to be, you know, talked about or thought about.
Yeah, and that's where we see more models and newer models coming to the fore. And you're absolutely right. It is an exceedingly difficult task to build it within essentially a monoline business. Now maybe replicated between voice and data or even content, but it is inherently a monoline business thinking and mindset that's being challenged here. Now here's something that's really been challenging this. You know, we can talk about individuals, we can talk about leadership, and they all play a crucial role. But a great equalizer in this context has been technology. I'm thinking, for example, of new solutions that currently use blockchain technology. I'm thinking even years back when we started sharing data through open APIs, and suddenly you got content in marketplaces starting to pop up. Not all of these models have kind of survived to the current day. There was a real sense of equalization that suddenly smaller, more nimble, more innovative players, or even teams within larger organizations could play a much bigger role. So when you look at today's environment and we start to look at the next wave of technologies, such as blockchain, such as artificial intelligence, what impact do you think those are having on the MNO's ability to innovate?
Yeah, look, I think just to talk about APIs, I mean, the way APIs have developed, and particularly REST APIs, have almost completely democratized technology. And what I mean by that is it's kind of, I don't say leveled the playing field, but it's made technology pieces and services so much more accessible. So almost kind of making something that was really, really specific and turning it into a kind of a Lego, a technology Lego that can be utilized to build solutions and build products and services. And I think blockchain is often overhyped. I think it has a very, very clear specific use cases. I was responsible for building out the blockchain strategy for a group. And I always joke about this, but you know, when you first start, when you walk around with a hammer, everything looks like a nail. So you think you can apply this technology to everything. But when you go through the phases and you distill it down, there are specific use cases where it makes an incredible amount of sense. But then there's other use cases where it's completely flawed. So, you know, it doesn't make sense. So, you know, I think blockchain will have a very, very significant impact in specific areas, particularly relating to intercompany or interorganizational trade and communications, potentially, barring, you know, the financial side, the potential CBDC money, et cetera. Barring that, I think there's definitely value. You know, there's traditional EDI systems, for example, that are being used for shipping and for customs clearing worldwide. I definitely see blockchain coming as a potential way of not necessarily shortcutting that, but definitely making that more transparent and more efficient. AI is already having an impact. I mean, if one just has a look at things like, trying to remember the technical term now, but the scribing and the writing AI tools that are out there already, their ability to take a few facts and turn that into a direct narrative is absolutely amazing and stunning. And, you know, they can write far better than most humans can write. And that becomes quite interesting. AI is going to be incredibly disruptive. I kind of sit on the Elon Musk side of things, where I think that, you know, general AI could be quite dangerous. But I think in very clear, defined spaces, AI becomes an invaluable tool. And organizations that I think embrace this technology early and find a place for AI in their businesses, basically free up capacity within their businesses so that they can do a lot more. So, you know, I don't see AI as an ability for businesses to kind of free up capacity within their existing teams and utilize AI to kind of take them to that next level or to make them a little bit more efficient. But you're still going to need, you know, AI at the end of the day. You're building content, you're using AI tools to build content for people. There was a joke I saw on Twitter 2 days ago where AI was building content for AI to read it, which was quite amusing. But at the end of the day, AI won't be spending any money. So you, at the end of the day, are delivering content and delivering value and delivering output from the AIs that are going to help you to serve your customers. And you're still going to need people to be able to make sure that that is right and make sure that it is correctly addressing your customers' requirements and needs. So there's always going to be a human element, but I think companies that start looking at the technology early and start working out its space within their business are definitely going to be a step ahead of everybody else.
Leon, this has been a great conversation. Perhaps just a last quick question from my side. And that is kind of, when you address a younger generation, when you address those who are just entering the workforce and thinking about product as a promising area, when they think about product innovation and the kind of impact it can make in customers' lives, what is your message to them? You've been involved in this space in various guises and in roles for many years now. What is your message to them? What do you think they can take out of this conversation that's particularly valuable for where they are in their career?
Sure. That's a very interesting question. The satisfaction one derives from solving a customer problem is amazing. And young people getting involved in technology, young engineers, young developers, young product specialists, young analysts, it's once they see the cycle and they see a product going from a whiteboard and a brainstorming session, you know, discussions with a customer, looping through, dealing with the JIRA, tickets that come through, you know, delivering the product, cycling back through, doing a scrum. You know, once they go through that cycle and actually see the delivery of the product and the outcomes of the delivery of that product. You know, I was very fortunate to be involved in businesses that were delivering a lot of product that delivered a lot of direct impact. And one of the things we tried to do was to kind of take out and summarize the outcomes and take those outcomes, those real tangible outcomes, children getting vaccines, people whose lives have improved, you know, taking those direct outcomes back to our development teams and our engineering teams and say, you know what, you've built this. This is what the real world impact of the delivery of this product did in the market. This is what it actually resulted in. Okay, yes, it paid your salary. Yes, it made sure that, you know, you had offices to go to. But at the end of the day, there were X number of people that were impacted. Their lives were improved by this product. You know, if you can keep that continuous cycle, the reinforcement cycle going through with young people coming into teams, it really gives them a sense of belonging. It gives them a sense of being part of the solution and being able to deliver something with impact. And I think that in itself is an intangible reward that can kind of show young people that this is you know, technology is something that is going to deliver impact and is going to make people's lives better. And, you know, if you can relate to people on that level, I think it really does tick the box in terms of helping them understand, picture themselves and place themselves in this world.
Leon, thank you for a great conversation. I really appreciate it. Thank you for making time to speak to us this morning, and looking really forward to see this episode going live.
Perfect. So it's always great chatting to you. Thank you.
Hidden Growth Champions, the podcast. Join us next time for more business news, views, and insights from across the globe.